Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, April 28th, 2015. I'm Maya Williams. Civil unrest in Baltimore is resonating in Los Angeles today, and the LAPD is operating in a state of heightened alert. Protests in Baltimore broke out after the funeral of Freddie Gray, who suffered a fatal spinal injury in police custody. We'll hear more from the scene of a downtown protest in a minute. First, Najee Ali is political director of LA's National Action Network. He says what's happening in Baltimore hits home.
What happened in Baltimore isn't just a Baltimore problem, it's an LA problem. So we need to get to the root causes of why police culture continues to abuse unarmed civilians.
The National Action Network will hold a rally and vigil Thursday evening in Leimert Park. Michael Brown's father is slated to speak. Now let's go downtown to 7th and Figueroa with ARN correspondent J.J. Maldonado. He's on the scene with a protest with the Stop Mass Incarceration Network. Hi, J.J., thank you for joining us. J.J., do we have you? Seems as though we might be experiencing a few technical difficulties, so just a couple moments, we'll try to get J.J. on the line. Okay, so we'll move on to our next story, and we might have JJ back for you later. For now, the Los Angeles Police Commission approved the use of body cameras for its police officers today. Lauren Day reports.
LAPD officers will soon be required to wear body cameras and begin recording before any encounter takes place. In the coming months, nearly 860 cameras will be given to LAPD officers. Peter Burbing, a lawyer for the American Civil Liberties Union of Southern California, says the rules to view the footage are not clear and allows officers to watch their footage before making a statement.
At best, that poses the danger of tainting an officer's memory with the video that he or she has watched, and certainly undermining public confidence in investigations.
In order to increase transparency, some people want all LAPD body cam footage to be released to the public. Chief of Police Charlie Beck says sometimes releasing footage may invade the privacy of those who are filmed.
We are meeting people in their homes on the worst day of their lives, oftentimes, and to make that video available to the general public, I think, violates the trust that we have with the people of Los Angeles.
Mayor Eric Garcetti hopes every LAPD officer will soon wear a body camera within the year. Lauren Day, Annenberg Radio News.
Okay, so we are back with J.J. Maldonado, who is downtown at a protest in L.A. J.J., thanks for joining us.
Hi, Maya.
Hi, can you tell us what is the Stop Mass Incarceration Network?
Yes, they're an organization, and pretty much their goal is to stop social injustice and police brutality and murder. So right now, the protest is very small. There is one organizer. His name is Keith James. And his message pretty much is to be in solidarity, in support of Freddie Gray and his family.
Okay, are you getting a sense from people that you might have spoken to that they're sympathetic with the violent demonstrations in Baltimore, or are they mostly there to promote peace?
Right now, I've just spoken to Keith, and he right now is very peaceful. You know, he just wants to spread that message of solidarity and just create an awareness of what's happening right now in Baltimore.
Are there any police presence on the ground at this demonstration?
Right now, there's not. There's a lot of security from the storefronts here on 7th and Figueroa and downtown where the protest is located. But it looks like more people are starting to gather. There's two people holding a large banner, and there's a lot of news organizations out here trying to interview Keith as well.
Okay, and can you tell us a little bit more about the crowd? Are there students? Are there people who've taken off work to be there today?
Right now, the crowd looks young. I'm not sure if they are students. Like I said, it's a crowd of maybe like three people so far.
Okay.
The protest just started at 4, so it's just kicking off. So it'll be interesting to see if more people come and what it'll look like in about, 15 or a half hour from now.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for being on the scene, and we'll look forward to hearing more from you.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks. The U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments today about whether states have the power to ban same-sex marriage. Andrew Tweedy has more on the historic court case.
Several same-sex couples are challenging the bans in Ohio, Michigan, Kentucky, and Tennessee. UC Berkeley law professor Melissa Murray explained the opposition is focused on protecting individual state power.
I think the states feel that this is a decision that's best left to the political process, and they also note that the states historically have had the freedom and the authority to define marriage in whatever way they've liked to within their own borders.
She added conservatives are aiming to preserve traditional marriage and parenthood.
This isn't about discrimination against gay and lesbian people, but simply about maintaining a traditional definition of marriage that focuses on marriage's origins as a vehicle for procreation.
However, Director of Policy at the Los Angeles LGBT Center, Dave Garcia, says the vote could be a historic civil rights victory because same-sex marriages deserve equal rights to heterosexual marriages. The justices' eventual ruling will determine whether same-sex marriage becomes a guaranteed constitutional right nationwide or whether states keep the authority to ban it. The decision is expected by late June. Andrew Tweedy, Annenberg, Radio News.
Wasting water may soon come at a heftier price. Today in Sacramento, Governor Jerry Brown proposed new legislation that would increase fines from $500 to up to $10,000 for California residents and businesses who waste an excessive amount of water. The proposal would also allow local governments to create and fund water conservation projects, like recycling initiatives. Legendary Los Angeles Dodger Kirk Gibson announced today that he has Parkinson's disease. Caitlin Plummer looks back at his famous home run during the 1988 World Series.
Kirk Gibson played 10 years for the Detroit Tigers before signing with the Los Angeles Dodgers in 1988. Gibson quickly established himself leading the Dodgers in home runs and runs scored during the regular season. But when the World Series came around, injuries to both his legs forced him to start Game 1 on the bench.
All year long, they looked to him to light the fire. And all year long, he answered the demands until he was physically unable to start tonight with two bad legs.
By the bottom of the ninth inning, the Dodgers were losing to the Oakland A's 3-4 with two outs. Then Gibson convinced manager Tommy Lasorda to let him pinch hit. After two strikes, Gibson hit three foul balls for a full count. And the rest is history.
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
Gibson played 17 seasons in the major leagues and managed the Arizona Diamondbacks from 2010 to 2014. He was scheduled to be part of the Tigers broadcast team this season, but didn't show up after opening day. Today, Gibson announced his diagnosis of Parkinson's disease to the Detroit Free Press, but said he looks forward to returning to the ballpark as soon as possible.
That piece was produced by Caitlin Plummer. The country's largest chicken company plans to phase out antibiotics by 2017. Tyson Foods says it will stop feeding its flock human antibiotics to slow the spread of superbacteria. Tyson follows McDonald's, which made a similar announcement last month. The company says it will keep treating sick birds with other medicines not given to humans. This is Annenberg Radio News. If you've ever wondered about the origins of curious words and phrases, here's Simon Makowicki with today's Root Source.
While the phrase, balls to the wall, might remind you of a coach giving a late-game pump-up speech or late 80s heavy metal, its origins actually come from military aviation. Control sticks in planes are often topped with a ball-shaped grip, and to get maximum power, you push the throttle all the way forward to the front of the cockpit or firewall. Another control is the joystick. Pushing it forward sends a plane into a dive. So, literally, pushing the balls to the firewall would put a plane into a maximum speed dive, something you've certainly seen in movies like Flyboys or Top Gun.
Hollywood, you're looking good. I'm going after Viper.
The earliest recording of the phrase is from the U.S. Air Force Academy cadets in 1969, although many Korean War veterans claim to have used the expression as well.
Dogs and humans have been evolving together for nearly 30,000 years. A new study shows they've learned to use their puppy eyes to their advantage through years of practice. So do they really love us, or are they just adapting? Detour's reporter Kristen Marguerite Deutsch went on quest to find out whether dogs are our real friends, or if it's all just one big scam.
American women love dogs. In fact, according to a poll by Rent.com, when women are given a choice between having a neighbor with a cat or a dog, or a male neighbor who could potentially be a love interest, a quarter of them will opt for the quadrupeds. For me, my Yorkie puppy Bree is family. She's been the constant source of affection that I needed to survive all of the crazy ups and downs in my 20s. Loves lost, career crashes, and family shakeups. I've always thought of her as pretty well trained. She always signals me when she wants to go out or be fed. And then it hits me. Maybe I've got this relationship all wrong. Maybe I'm the one that's well trained to do whatever it is she wants. Is it possible it's just as Walt Disney imagined it, that Bree actually sees me as her pet and imagines herself as my owner? Am I being scammed by a 10-pound teddy bear face master manipulator?
It was plain to see that my old pet needed someone. Oh, he's intelligent enough, as humans go. Of course, dogs are a pretty poor judge of human beauty.
Dr. Slayton, a top veterinarian at Westlake Village Animal Hospital, says it really doesn't matter who's the pet. He's a pretty no-nonsense guy who dedicates a lot of time and resources to rescue dogs. But he turns to mush when he talks about his own Mastiff.
Yeah, he was my boy. We went through a lot together, you know, going to vet school and moving and marrying and things like that. I mean, every time I was going through a breakup or something like that, he's there. And you get home and they're never sad. They're never mad at you for doing something, for not taking them on a walk or whatever. They're always just happy and they just want to be with you. It's the never-ending love.
A recently released Duke University study shows that oxytocin, the same feel-good, stress-reducing hormone humans release when we hug someone we love, is released in both humans and dogs just by making eye contact with one another. They're the only non-primate animal to look humans in the eyes to bond with them. Experts are also discovering the many distinct personality traits and varying types and levels of intelligence dogs have that mimic that of human toddlers. Dr. Brian Hare is the director of the Canine Cognition Center at Duke University. He's studied dogs for the past decade. Dr. Hare has proven that dogs have the ability to be empathetic, to make inferences, and even to be quite cunning and manipulative, almost like Disney imagined it. And something I know all too well.
There's always, I think especially it's Bree, this way. Bree, Bree. Bree, we're not going that way. Bree, you're so stubborn. Okay, this way. Bree, Bree, this way.
Dr. Lori Santos is the director of the Comparative Cognition Laboratory at Yale University. She says it's actually our own human intuition that can often get in the way of how our dogs react.
What you find is that the dogs seem to react really just on the basis of how the person acts. So if the person thinks the dog did something naughty, but the dog didn't do anything bad, the dog acts really guilty. However, the other case is true. If the dog does something naughty, but you're acting like you didn't know it, then the dog doesn't act guilty. And so I think the idea is when we see dogs acting guilty, we think it's because they really feel bad for what they themselves have done. But in practice, that doesn't seem to be what's driving their reactions. I think that's a case where our intuitions were violated. My instinct is that, dogs have been shaped to track our behavior over now many, many, many years. And so I think that doing the real science of this is going to be important. It's just really a new field.
Wait, did she just say they've evolved to track our behavior pretty well? It kind of sounds like I'm the one being trained after all.
For Dr. Slayton, he seems pretty okay with that too, though he may not admit it.
Especially with my dog Onyx, right away it was just like there was a bond and you could tell he was looked at me like I'm his savior kind of thing and won't leave my side. And when I'm gone, he's just really, emotional.
I'm watching Dr. Slayton as he says this, and I can tell you he's returning the look to Onyx in spades. Kristen Marguerite Deutsch, Annenberg Radio News.
That's it for Team Tuesday. Holly Thompson is the newscast producer, and the executive producer is Taylor Haney. We would also like to give a special thanks to our news director and fearless leader, Willa Seidenberg. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Maya Williams.
Food time, 'cause we are the champions. my favorite cookie.
You all, but it's been no bed of roses.